how to start?
Well, you know, it's just writing. I mean,
here's something important to remember about dialogue.
Every word matters.
No, it doesn't.
They're vital.
I want to go to this place that I think it needs to go to.
The only thing that counts is what you see on the screen.
I will write like 4, 5, 6 hours a day.
And it will be a voice made of ink and rage.
Okay, I'm really glad you asked me that question.
Welcome back to the show. In this episode, I sat down with screenwriter Melanie Marnick to talk about her new show, Apples Never Fall. She also has a string of credits, including shows like Big Love, My America, The Big C, Low Winter Sun, The Affair, The OA, The Sun, and A Murder at the End of the World. In this interview, we talk about what it means to be an entrepreneurial writer, how advertising plus theater equals a career in television, what it means to write in a way that connects with people, and shows that ask a profound question, among other things. You can also find this interview on the Creative Screenwriting website. Here is my wide-ranging interview with screenwriter Melanie Marnick.
You know, I didn't grow up in a place where I was hanging around with screenwriters. I grew up in Duluth, Minnesota. And I was probably from very, 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 very young, an absolutely voracious reader. And I think that sparked something in me about the written word that I always gravitated towards. But I didn't know that, you know, for myself, that that would actually be a career. Mm-hmm. So when I went to college, I wound up being a journalism major with an emphasis in advertising. And then I went into advertising and wound up doing and loving TV and radio commercials, writing those. And it was during that time I was like, I feel like I want to write in a form that is longer than 30 to 60 seconds.
Right.
Like it was just so, it was like, but I didn't know. I never thought this. I never in a million years thought this. But what sparked in me while I was working in advertising was a love of theater. And I decided, I loved advertising. I had no intention of leaving advertising, and then got literally like a theater bug. And I was like, I feel like I have to pay attention to this. And I started writing plays and realized that without any theater education, I could only take myself so far as a playwright. I just didn't know what I was doing. I had instincts, but I really didn't know what I was doing. So I kind of bet the farm and went to graduate school to get my graduate degree in playwriting. And that was the big sort of leap, going from advertising to playwriting. And I worked, I had a great career as a playwright. I really loved it. But again, just like in advertising, I had a feeling I was supposed to write something longer. In theater, after a few years, I felt like, oh, this isn't the end. There's something still that I want to do. And I love TV. I always loved TV, but I still, for some reason, wasn't quite, it was a few years before I kind of connected the dots, like, oh, that's where I'm supposed to go. That's what I'm supposed to do. And then honestly, kind of out of the blue, my theater agent sent a play of mine to an agent in LA who, unbeknownst to me, sent the play to the showrunners of Big Love. Mm. And so it was, sometimes I go, oh, that was an odd path. But I think it was an extremely necessary path and the right path for me. I'd like to say that advertising plus theater equals TV, because it kind of turned out that way. And it was just, I think if I had gone into TV somehow miraculously a lot sooner, I don't think I would have had the tools as a writer to build a career in it. I think I learned a lot every step of the way in those various versions of I'm going to call it even advertising, dramatic writing is various versions of storytelling that sort of at the end created in me someone who really understood TV, was and had a very specific toolkit that I think is very beneficial for TV. So it seems like a roundabout path, but I think in a funny way, it's a fairly linear evolution.
There's a lot of breadcrumbs there. Was there any part of that that made you more entrepreneurial? Because you came in as kind of the writer producer. Any thoughts on that?
It's. I think you're. Sorry, I'm losing my voice for some reason. I think you're sensing something that's really important to like the link of those three things. And it starts with the career in advertising, and that you are very aware that you are writing to connect to an audience. Mm-hmm. And you are very aware of a budget, of a client, of something needing to perform, you know, a certain way. I mean, it is provable whether your work is succeeding or not. And in when you're writing TV commercials, then I went to theater and I carried that sense of responsibility toward an audience with me and felt that like it is one of the hats I wear. It isn't just, oh, I want to write for the sake of writing. That A, I still sort of course always do, but B, like we write to connect with people. And I would say that I always thought when I was writing plays, like, not just why does this play matter to me, but why would this matter to other people? And I think that's something that's really worth carrying with one, you know, if you go into any sort of, you know, TV or features or whatever, that you have to follow this spark and this light inside of you in terms of what stories you choose to tell, but never forget that you are telling them to be received by somebody. And does that make any sense? Like, you know what I mean? Like yeah. It's and then I think in terms of the entrepreneurial hat, there's something about that that's connected to being sort of a producer, and that is an awareness of the bigger picture and the bigger responsibilities, be they to connect with the audience, or be it budget, be it managerial, be it like how to get something up and running, that there is this responsibility we have. I can't speak to features, but for TV, like it isn't just writing something. If you have the great good fortune to produce it as well, boy, that makes you look at the work differently. And in a really great way, really great way.
Is there any maybe self-talk that's in your mind when you're thinking this is not good enough, this doesn't elicit emotion? Like what is that? What do you tell yourself when, or is there any examples that come to mind for that?
You and your magazine ever want to get a whole group together to talk about insecurity? That's it, isn't it? Like, I do feel when I'm in the flow of writing, I don't doubt myself. And by in the flow, I mean like when I'm, you know, cup of coffee and I'm deep in a script and I'm going, like it really going. It is getting myself worked up to that point sometimes. I think I can have anxiety about, am I doing this right? Am I going to nail this one? Because we always judge our beginnings by our last ending. And that is so unfair. Like in the end product, well, yeah, it had 5 drafts, sure. But then we start out with a blank page. Like, oh, why isn't it like draft number 5 of that, you know? And I think it's really hard to let the beginning work be a hot mess and to just go and to always trust that you have the skills, that you have the instincts to take that initial sort of dump of impulses and information and gestures and ideas, and really then use all your skills to shape it into something special. But I think every time I approach a new project, there's a sense of amnesia. Like, how do I've never done this before. I've never done it. And they're like, oh, wait, I've done it a bunch. It's okay. But I think it's, you know, the old adage of trust the process, trust the and to admit that there is a process, that all of us have a process. And then when it leaves us, it goes to a producer or a collaborator or whatever, they have a process that you enter into, and it becomes the process of the two of you, and that you will continue to be able to shape something. And trusting in that journey is really, I think, one of the tricks of writing, because I think we have this, what writing asks of us, I think good writing asks of us, is to be vulnerable and not come from a place of ego, yet to push yourself to achieve something, and then to push to get into the marketplace or whatever it may be, you wind up having to have a pretty thick skin and a solid ego. And, you know, it's, these things can seem really counterintuitive, but yeah, I think for me, when I start out on anything, be it every morning I get up and have to work, or a brand new project, it's always reminding myself, I know how to do this. I know how to do this. And I'm always, my husband's a writer, and I'm always like going over to him, like, why do we forget this? Why do we forget this? And I would, I do little things. Like I'll do, if I'm particularly daunted by something, like say an outline or a script, I will not start at the beginning. Like I wrote one script for TV, my first script for the OA season one, I wrote it backwards. Because I loved it so much and it was so powerful, but I was like, I don't know what that first, I don't know how to start it. Even though I had an outline, I didn't know how to, there's something about jumping in that was really daunting to me. So I wrote backwards. I wrote from the end. So that way I could kind of sneak up on the beginning. Like the beginning didn't know I was coming. And it worked.
Is there, I mean, you've worked on a variety of shows. Is there a lane that you feel like is yours? Like, is it some mystery plus family drama? Or like, what do you feel like this is me? This is a thread through all of my work, perhaps?
Good question. I think for me, every one of my projects has embraced moral complexity and characters who were very complex morally. You know, they're not good people, they're not bad people. They're people with wounds, with damage, with maybe sometimes dubious motives, maybe not always doing the most awesome things, but I've always been drawn to figure out how to make those characters, to figure out a way to make to craft those characters in a way that an audience feels that they're relatable rather than weird, you know, like, oh, that person contains many contradictions. So do I connect with them. That person is torn between two things they probably shouldn't be torn between. Oh, I feel that way sometimes too. I connect, like I really am drawn to that kind of work and that, and those kinds of characters where you can't say good guy, bad guy, but complicated guy. I love that. I love that. And I think shows that also at their heart ask a profound question. And I've gravitated towards shows. So it's not so much like a, I wonder if someone not me could look at the trajectory of the shows I've worked on and said, oh yes, they are all fill in the blank. I don't know if I actually can, because I see them differently. I see in each one of them, and it was why I pursued jobs with each of these shows when I was writing on staffs, is that these shows that I've been on, vast majority of them asked a question that was a question I too was asking at that point in my life. And I like to really invest in a job and a project and bring a lot of myself and my experience and whatever I'm going through to the room, to the scripts, to the storytelling. And with Big Love, honestly, I had just gotten married and I was fascinated by the topic of love, by the subject of love and marriage. And what I wasn't really interested in examining super conventional marriages. I was interested in examining like how big love could be, you know, like really, like how can we look at love in a way without judgment? Big C, I had just lost my dad to cancer. And, you know, I always feel like, how do you mine growth out of loss? And that was something kind of at the heart of that show. You know, the OA, I've always been convinced that what we see isn't all there is. And, you know, asking myself, is there something beyond this? And that show, that was at the heart of that show, you know, so to be able to live that your work is actually about exploring the questions that you yourself as a person is fascinated in, makes it not feel like a job. It makes it feel like best graduate school seminar ever.
How do you think about some of these shows you've worked on where
maybe the narrative is not normal. So like the OA is kind of a unique sci-fi. The Son is kind of two stories in one, at least like simultaneously. And then obviously The Affair is so different in terms of perspective and point of view. Do you feel like you need to is it just that being in the writer's room, you understand enough about which way it's headed, or it seems to be particularly difficult to work on something that's never been done before in some ways?
Yeah, I think I tend to not be interested in a job unless they all need to seem really hard to me. I love that. I love looking at a book, like even, Apples Never Fall that I just did now. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is a great book. Oh my God, this is gonna be so hard to adapt. Yes, I'm in. Like every time, I think if I see it too clearly, I'm not that interested in it. And I like having the story be a problem I have to solve when I adapt it or when I step into a room or whatever it may be. I think that for me, there's something, I love being challenged narratively and in terms of, how I approach something. And I just think, our experience of a nonlinear story is still linear, you experience in a linear way, but to use shifts in points of view or shifts in time to open up a show, a story, character, is just really intriguing to me. It gets at something emotionally for the characters and that I think is surprising.
Without giving plot details away, where did this kind of begin? Like, how do you begin a book adaptation?
It's funny you ask, because I was just looking at on YouTube, Francis Ford Coppola talking about reading Mario Puzo's book, Mafia, and like figuring out how to do it. And I was like, oh, wow. It looks like it's just as hard for him as it is for the rest of us. And it really cheered me up. I think on the one hand, it's easy to go like, oh, great. I have an amazing piece of IP. I have an incredible book. It's going to be so much easier. Maybe. It is just a lot of putting your shoulder to it. And I'm looking, where did it go? Like, I had the galleys for Leon's book, and it is a million post-it notes and a million notes and just dissecting everything and really looking at what makes it work as a book. And then typically you go, oh my God, this is wonderful. This is incredible. I can do this. And then when you do the read on it, that is like, okay, and now what of this can easily translate into TV? That's the second read in a sense. And that's where you go, oh my God, all this great stuff, it's actually an internal monologue. All this great stuff is backstory from 30 years ago. Oh my God, all this great stuff is in their imagination, whatever it may be. And the stuff that comes across is incredible, vivid action in a book on screen you can't do. And so you have to then do this really rigorous read and this breakdown of like, how do I take this incredible story? And Leon is like, her books have plot, 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 plot. I mean, that's what's brilliant. And character, like she does both, but it's still like this intense translation. And sometimes the things that really matter in a book for me aren't the things that are external. And so then how do you take those things and turn them into externalized story so that we're watching them in real time with the character? And that's really tricky. It's fun, but it makes it, it's not a one-to-one process of this chapter is this first 10 minutes, right? It doesn't work like that, or at least, again, not in the books I tend to gravitate to or the projects I gravitate to. As you point out, they seem to play with time and point of view. So it's the adaptation process is a really like, just roll up your shirt sleeves and read the book, read the book, read the book. And for me, breaking it out, like first story-wise, in a sense, plot-wise, and what is action? What is actual action? What is actually happening? And then looking at it on an emotional level and saying, okay, all these emotions, all these thoughts these characters are having, how can they become story and work into the plot? Because that's what's going to make it tick, and that's what's going to make it really rich. But it's literally, I don't know how to do it efficiently. It is just reading it, and like tons of post-it notes, going through pencils, and just labor, you know, labor. But it's tricky. And for this project, Apples, like, it was structure. Because it is multiple points of view, it is multiple timelines. And what Leon did so brilliantly in her book, like, she toggles between characters, but it's easier because it says Brooke, and then you know it's Brooke's chapter or whatever, and it can lay out differently in a book than it can in a show. And so to have gone into that book and broken out the stories and broken out the characters and timelines and points of view, and then saying, okay, what structural sort of construct will hold all of this? And what will let me, the writer's room, tease out the strongest stories and then weave them together in a way that is structurally interesting, but more than that, the gestalt evokes, you know, captures the spirit of the book and yet also lets it live on screen. It is just a meticulous long process for me. I maybe other people do it quicker, but there's no shortcuts.
Was there any point, and this is maybe kind of a marketing question, where in the beginning you do look, because you know they're going to market this from the author of Big Little Lies, and people have that in their head immediately. If nothing else, it's from the same author and there's movie stars in it. But did you think about that, or adding music like that show had, or anything like that, any comps like that early on?
Like going, ooh, the Ghost of Big Little Lies kind of thing?
Well, not even that, just like maybe even reading that book and then watching the show, and like, how did they do it? That's a very logistic way to do it, though. It's not emotional, but...
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, I was a massive fan of Big Little Lies when it came out. I'm a huge fan of Leon Moriarty. I think she's a genius. I deliberately didn't go back to Big Little Lies because as much as I love it, I had to serve this book of Leon's in a way that it needed to be served. And I didn't want to be influenced. I mean, I saw Big Little Lies when it came out, however many years ago that was. Like I said, it's phenomenal. But I didn't want that alive in my head when I was looking at this, because I wanted to really serve this story and these characters and these themes. And I had to do it in a way that sort of was very specific to this book. And I it's interesting. Maybe now I'll go back and look at Big Little Lies and see if there's anything similar. But because Leon, as an author, plays with time and point of view and all that with all her books, or many of them. But yeah, it was about sort of actually doing more, like kind of not looking up at any other influences, but drilling down into this material, like I said, her themes, and figuring out how to you know, what the frequency, sort of like the radio frequency of it should be to make this adaptation. And in terms of like stars or actors, like for me, right away when I was reading the book and this character, Joy Delaney, I literally just saw Annette Bening right away. I can't believe we got her. Like, it's amazing. And that she is such an incredible creative partner. And so I just saw her right away. And then everything sort of came from that, you know, the beautiful Sam Neill and all the Delaney kids. But yeah, this had to be its own thing. It had to be its own thing.
For something like this, I may like make a list of like the plot in terms of the mystery, because you want certain things to be discovered later on for the viewers. And then also the family drama. Do you break it up individually, like when you think about the characters, and then kind of weave them back together? Like, how do you think about some of those things?
Yeah. So going back like a moment ago when you said, like, how do you approach actually breaking down a book, or, you know, doing this? One thing I do is I get tired thinking about it. Like when I'm reading the book, then after I've read it, you know, maybe like twice, I sit down with it and I turn pages and I just type like quick, almost log lines for what I want. You know, Joy does this, Stan does this, the cops show up, blah, blah, blah. And what you see then are the character storylines and then say, for lack of a better way of putting it, the procedural or crime story beats, right? And I didn't, wrote the pilot that I wrote and I had all that woven together, but it is taking those things, looking at them separately because they each have to hold water. I think sometimes if you weave things together too soon, you don't see the weak spots. But when you see a clean storyline just on its own, you go, ooh, okay, that didn't work. And so I do them separately, then I weave them together. And for this particular project, it wasn't just a matter of toggling between the now and then or character and crime, but it was how do you weave it together in a way that those threads are twisting and complicating each other. So it isn't just like, okay, I've been in the house for a long time, now I'm going to the cops. No, what's happening in the house that they are thinking of or talking about or deciding that is completely contradicted by what we see is happening, you know, so that it keeps the story hopping from foot to foot to foot to foot to foot.
And more like because of instead of just and then and then and then.
100%. Yeah. And also I'd add, little do they know. And unfortunately for them, you know, like it's a lot of that because I really wanted this sense for the audience and kind of gets back to my belief in like, we're here to entertain people. We're here to make them want to watch this. How do we keep the story alive and light on its feet? And it isn't just so exactly that. And then, and then, and then, but it's like, holy crap over there, this is happening. Oh my God. Oh no. And by juxtaposition, then you get that energy. And that was something in the writer's room we were tireless about. Absolutely tireless. Like we would sit there and weave the stories and we go, okay, that technically works. That's solid. Now, what's the Apple's version of that? What's the Apple's version? What made it us? What made it this show? What made it alive in a way that Apple's needed to be alive? And so it wasn't just the blending. It was a lot of rejiggering of the blending that was fun. But you know, we had to be really, really rigorous.
I think it's 7 episodes. Did you know that right away? Did you decide that? Did someone else decide that? How does all that kind of work out?
This, I will say this, and fellow writers, please listen. At first I was like, it's eight episodes. Nice even number, 8. Everybody does 8. Wow. 8 is nice. And then it was well before I had the writer's room. It was when I was still writing the pilot and I was kind of thinking ahead and breaking things out by episode. Oh, he was doing the pitch. And I was like, uh-oh, 8 episodes. And I feel like I kind of blow a flat tire somewhere in there. You know, when people are like, oh, it's a great show, but episodes 4, 5, and 6 lose their footing. I think it's because they went one episode too much. Like, you know, it's, and I was like, ooh, 8 episodes. And then I just did an exercise where I cut it down to 7. And I was like, oh, wait, that works. Cause then you have episode 1, the Delaney's, episode 2, Amy, no, Logan, Amy, Brooke, Troy, Stan, Joy. Like, there you go. Like, you have, that's your show. If I have one more episode, what the hell is it? Like, it's, I would have to tread water. And I think it's brutal to say that, but I think things typically only get better by compression. I think it helps a lot. And I think sometimes we try and invent story to fill something up when in reality, it's a matter of compressing it. Maybe making it a little smaller and suddenly the whole thing has gas.
I think we just got like maybe 1 minute and sorry if this is a bigger question, but do you, when I saw The Affair, I was thinking we're going to see shows like this all the time now. And that hadn't really happened with the perspective. Do you see that coming in the future? What are your thoughts on that?
Do you mean the
switching narrative and yeah, just the little, yeah.
I wonder if there are other shows like that. That was really smart. I do think it's fun for us to push the forms we use. You know, I think that's really great. And again, as long as it's like organic and central to what, not pushing for the sake of pushing, but to push how we look at time or perspective or character or veracity, you know, authenticity of voice or the truthfulness, and twist it, but it, making sure it has something to do with the actual content of the show as well, or the, you know, what you want to do with the show as well. I hope we do see more shows like that. Yeah, it's fun, but anything with great character twists and turns is always good.
Thanks so much for tuning into the show. Before you take off, I want to give you a free gift. I'm giving you my first book, Ink by the Barrel, for free. That's the digital download and audiobook at brockswenson.com. Inside this book, you'll learn how to annihilate writer's block by embracing Elizabeth Gilbert's playful trickster mentality. You can learn to weaponize your anxiety with Kevin Kelly's different is better approach. And learn how to defend your time with Ryan Holiday's calendar anorexia mindset. There's just a few other ideas in the book, Ink by the Barrel. It's also based on over 400 interviews I've done right here on Creative Principles. So go steal that book right now, Ink by the Barrel, to learn how to be a prolific writer. You can get your copy, that's digital download and audiobook, at brockswinson.com, brockswinson.com. And if it's your first time here, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode.